Good afternoon and welcome. It's Friday and thank you for tuning in to Eagle FM, wherever you're tuned in from. I'm pretty sure if you're a regular, you know that I'm really fighting the edge to say, basically fighting the edge to make sure that I don't start yelling welcome to Home Run. That's because it's Friday and you know what that means. It's Witani Childline radio program in collaboration with, Lifeline Childline and Eagle FM and Helmet. And today in the studio, today with me, as usual, on this program, there are always guests here to give us a few pointers on, believe it or not, how to eat, of all things. And in studio with me is Jordine Engelbrecht. Yes, I just got a congratulation. For the first time in the history of mankind, I got it right. And right alongside her is Sunshine Shefeni, who will be giving us the basics, more like the basics on the understanding on the correlation between nutrition and school performance. So you may wanna, you know, increase the volume on this one. So let's just welcome my guest before I give them the floor to give us this wonderful education. Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
Fine, how are you?
Sunshine? Good afternoon. How are you?
All good. So, are we ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes.
The floor is yours.
Okay. Hello and welcome, everyone, to Witani Childline Radio in collaboration with Eagle FM. It's your girls, Jordine and...
Sunny.
And today we have an awesome topic, which is...
Nutrition and school performance. As we unwrap this topic, we will be making sure to ask a question, as we always do, at the end of the discussion. Before we begin, a reminder to all of our listeners, if you need someone to talk to or need counselling services, please remember to contact the toll-free counselling helplines on 116 or 106.
What is nutrition? Is what most of you might ask yourselves. Nutrition is eating healthy foods that help your body grow, stay strong, and have energy to play, learn, and feel good. Because it's anyways Friday, guys. We all have to feel good. You know that. Anyways, healthy food and nutrition is one of the most important factors that influence a child's ability to learn, concentrate, and succeed in school.
Because we all know a balanced diet provides the body and brain with the nutrition needed for growth, memory, attention span, and problem solving. Children who eat healthy meals are generally more alert, energetic, and participatory in class. In contrast, poor nutrition can lead to fatigue, poor concentration, and frequent headaches.
So skipping meals can lead to tiredness, poor concentration, and low academic performance, which is not good for school learners or students. A balanced diet should include fruits, vegetables, whole grains, lean proteins, and dairy or other calcium-rich foods.
So, we are going on a short break. Please stay tuned for more interesting information on nutrition and school performance.
Nutrition and school performance. More on that after the break. Stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel
anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
And welcome back. So we continue with the importance or the correlation between nutrition and school performance with Tiny Childline radio program, educating us on the correlation between the two. So we continue where we left off before the break. Ladies, take it away.
Hey, thank you all for still staying with us. We are finally diving into the theme of school performance. Nutrition like carbohydrates help our body tissue to perform certain functions like moving our legs to run. However, I just can't seem to fathom the idea of it helping my school performance. Jodine, can you please help me understand this?
I know this seems hard to understand, but I assure you, it's very simple. We learned that carbohydrates help our body cells get energy through the process of respiration.
Yes.
Now, hippocampus. Hippocampus, amygdala, and cerebral cortex. Hippocampus acts like a saving button or a librarian that takes new facts and turns them into long-term memories. Now, amygdala handles feelings like joy or fear and helps you remember things that are tied to strong emotions. Cerebral cortex, the large outer layer that stores long-lasting knowledge like words, history, facts, and how to ride a bike. Now, I know some of us can't ride bikes, like me personally. I never tried to learn, but yeah, I know a lot of you can. So.
Oh, okay. I think I'm starting to understand this a lot more. Thank you.
No problem. So what type of food do we need to eat, and how does it help with our memory?
If we eat fish or nuts, it will help us process information quickly. Oats can help us stay focused for long periods of time, and eggs to help us store new information.
Whoa! I am definitely guilty of not eating enough eggs. Perhaps it will help me remember the new math formula I learned today.
I am guilty of that too. So, from what I understand, nutrition has a direct effect on our school performance. If we are able to focus in school and be able to retain what we learned,
ShopRite's birthday is in the major league with major low prices. Get 4 kg real good IQF chicken mixed portions, only 189 Namibian dollars 99. 10 kg champion super maize meal for 134 Namibian dollars 99. And 200 grams Baker's Eat Some More shortbread or chocolate biscuits. All variants, just 29 Namibian dollars 99 each. Valid until 9 August 2026. Get major savings with ShopRite's major league birthday. Plus, pick a box for a chance to win your share of over $500,000 Namibian dollars and weekly gift cards. Buy any 3 participating products. WhatsApp the code on your till slip and pick a box to see if you're a winner. Only at ShopRite.
Welcome back, and we continue where we left off after that short commercial break. And if you're listening, you must have already learned a lot of new things, starting with, hippocampus. For some reason, maybe it's the Kavango in me, but when I first, when I heard Jordan say hippocampus, I was just thinking about a bunch of hippos at a university campus. It turns out it's a part of your brain. So, well, at least I learned something new today, but we continue with this discussion. Sunshine USA?
Okay, so from what I understand, nutrition has a direct effect on our school performance. If we are able to focus in school and be able to retain what we learned, we will feel much more confident and have a positive attitude towards school. This will in turn improve our performance.
Precisely. I hope our listeners understood this too. We will be right back after the short break again. So yeah.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nuku dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewetike kovano ile koshiwana. Kono ngeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitida mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetida oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetida o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafelane Eagle FM. The eye.
And welcome back. We continue where we left off. And if you just tuned in, you are listening to Witani Childline radio program here on Eagle FM. And that's by Lifeline Childline in collaboration with Eagle FM and Helmut and Jordan and Sunshine for today. And today's subject or today's topic we are being educated on in terms of nutrition is the correlation between nutrition and school performance by Jordan Engelbrecht and Sunshine Shefeni. Ladies.
Hey, you guys are still listening?
Yay! I hope you have all enjoyed our little chat. Now is the question we are leaving you with today is, what is your favorite food and does it benefit your brain cells?
Thank you so much for listening to Witani Childline Radio in collaboration with Eagle FM. Remember, if you need any counseling support or you're someone to talk to, just contact the toll-free counseling numbers 106 or 116.
We would also like to take the opportunity to thank our sponsors UNICEF Namibia and European Union for their continued support.
That's all for today. It's your favorite host, Jodine and
Sunny.
Same time, same place, same people, different topic. Have a nutritional weekend ahead. Yeah.
Have a nutritional weekend. That's how today's Witani Childline radio program ends, and that's on nutrition and school performance, the correlation between the two. So I hope you learned something new because I definitely did. And I just confirmed a few minutes ago, you know, off mic that hippocampus has nothing to do with hippos. It's just, you know, it's a human biology thing. You learn something new every day. And Jordan, Sunshine, thank you very much for talking to us on this topic.
You're welcome.
And thank you.
And, well, same to you guys. Have a nutritional weekend.
Lipurane ngeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nuku dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewetike kovano ile koshiwana. Kono ngeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitida mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetida oipindi konu konda doili nawa. Nune udo otukwetida o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ileko mberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu matatu o mafelane Eagle FM. The eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The eye.
Welcome to Home Run. Now I can say, welcome to Home Run. Yes, properly. Welcome to Home Run. And it's Friday, so we, let's talk about, in the previous segment of, in the previous segment, I learned that, hippocampus has nothing to do with hippos. And I hope you also learned something new. So we continue and we basically start here with Home Run and continue as usual until the hour of 7. And today's discussion is based on the youth. What are the African youth saying? I mean, Dwight, I like how we are very passionate on this continent, especially in relation to, to the youth. You know, we have the largest youthful population.
Mm.
We have a lot of potential.
Mm.
Young people, these young people that, I don't think we have stopped to do a sort of like an analysis with regards to what are the youth's point of view on some of the subjects, especially in relations to development?
Yeah.
In a very extensive way that, that the report that we're going to use today, that's going to be a main source of our, of today's Home Run reference. And that's African Youth Survey 2026. So, as usual, some dozen out there with pockets deep enough to carry out the survey. They carried out the survey, put out the document, and were kind enough to give us an audio interview on this topic. So today is going to be a blast.
Yeah. So who I interviewed for our discussion for today, he is the founder of the... let me actually just say it's Mr. Ivar Ishikovitz. He, who is the representative from the Ishikovitz Family Foundation, who basically launched or started this Africa Youth Survey back in 2020 when the first survey came out. It's now actually in its fourth year, just to provide some particular, background on that discussion. And Helmut, you and I, we spoke about the 2024 one, remember? When I stumbled upon the one that included Namibia's particular perspectives, and I see here for the 2026 version, Namibia wasn't in the Namibians that were interviewed were not in, they probably didn't respond. So, there's a cluster of nations that are used. I assume it's not everyone being used here, being cited, because I don't think this is the full 55 country list, but it says 14, 16, 15 countries that responded.
Yeah.
Predominantly, it depends on how many countries there are. But yeah, this, and they cited also that basically it was a 50-50 male split in this year's particular report, meaning 50% women, 50% men, or, young men and women that were interviewed primarily for this discussion. Now, where that starting point that you highlighted there, where we come from. Now, I pitched a few questions. You, the listeners, you'll have the opportunity of hearing the audio just now in a short realm.
Yeah.
But the questions I pitched, I actually just want to read it for our listeners. The questions that you and I had agreed upon.
Yeah.
So we asked the question, we asked three questions, but the first one technically is like 2.5 questions rolled up into one, which was, through this report for 2026, can we see a dimension of the generational divide and how things are perceived between the older generation, like the baby boomers? I use the baby boomers, but for essence, baby boomers, guys, they are the generation that would be now your grandparents to a great extent right now. They were born between the 40s to the 60s. And what has been happening across the world is that many of the younger generations are now technically complaining that why, you know, opportunities are not happening for them or not cascading downwards for them is that they realize that their grandparents and parents sit with a lot of assets and a lot of wealth and had achieved opportunities and had the ability to make use of those opportunities when they were young. So I'm talking about in the 70s and the 80s and in the 90s. If you now obviously try to look for some of the particular talking points that emanate from this year's Africa Youth Survey report, which is also released in two parts. So Helmut and I, we're just sitting with part one, which we read through primarily, and which is also based upon the interview that I conducted with Mr. Ishikovitz. So the first question, like I said, had multiple parts in it. The first part was looking at the generational divide, older generations, the younger generations. Then continuing on, especially on things like individual goals and overall development, are we seeing overall development impact younger generations today? For example, like what happened back then for our parents, our grandparents. I got a whole bunch of stories specifically about scenarios that you could see were novel ideas for communities back then, which when you try to look at today, Helmut, you would think today is like standard starting points for everyone to come from. Yeah. And I'll explain some of that after the interview. And then the other part of the questions was, and if we look at challenges being faced as opposed to those of before, and if this particular view from this report is also spilling into any difference in the views between generations of the interventions from nations leaders on in relation to addressing these challenges. So as I said, it had multiple parts in that question. Second question looked at, going into more detail on the previous question, can we see a scenario that the newer generations, like in Europe and in North America, for example, have been speaking greatly about, the world having changed and the opportunities being different for the new generations versus what was there for their parents and grandparents? And finally, the Africa Youth Report also reaffirms what other research indicators across the globe and on the continent have also spoken about on the disconnect between election campaign promises and the delivery time frame. Okay, that was Helmut's English. I'm sorry, Helmut. You lost me there. On the delivery of these promises in general, yeah. I had to slide over two words, guys. Just letting you know. There was no loss in translation. Is this the message that is becoming louder with every year? That was the premise for our discussion. And we'll be listening now to Mr. Ishikovitz just after that, because Helmut and I will be taking it, we'll be going through the report and looking at the various particular points, because this also knocks back into, do you remember the elections report, that discussion I had with the Namibia Institute of Development earlier this year? Similar talking points that emanate, but we'll have a listen. All right. Mr. Ivor Ishikovitz, thank you for taking the time to joining us here during the discussion, and specifically for joining us on Eagle FM, where we always try to get Pan-African perspectives, insights, as well as also certain particular takes of events happening outside in the rest of the continent, outside of Namibia. But specifically for you, Ivor, I'd like to welcome you to this specific first-time engagement based upon work that your foundation and the Pan-African Youth Survey, Pan-African
Yeah, Pan-African Youth Survey have been conducting in terms of the various surveys that come out every 2 years, I speak under correction. But firstly, if you know, just to welcome you, thank you and welcome.
Thank you very much to you and to your listeners in Namibia, one of my favorite countries in Africa, and it's great to be talking all things Africa.
100%. Ivor, if we start off, if we get into the first particular take and the first particular scenario of the report, or this year's report, because this year's report tries to speak towards something I have been suspecting myself personally as an avid follower of developments between generations around the world, but in Africa it hasn't been as clear. And I'm talking about this particular scenario. Can we see a dimension of the generational divide on how things are perceived between the older generations, like the, I don't want to say boomers, but you know what, I also had parents that were part of the boomers, for example, and millennials, and especially on things like individual goals and overall development. I'll just stop there for now because there's a second part to that question. So, you know, what can we see?
Well, first of all, we talk to a group of people between the ages of 18 and 24 years old. And there's a very specific reason that we talk to this demographic. First of all, when we commissioned the youth survey, I wanted to be able to look into the future of the continent. I wanted to be able to look at where the continent was going, not from a generation that was going to be our leaders in 10 or 20 years' time, but a generation that are about to become our leaders, business leaders, social and economic leaders, and obviously political leaders. And this is exactly the age group that we talk to, and the reflection we get, the stories we are told about Africa are coming from those people. I can tell you that we started this process 6 years ago. The first survey didn't look that dramatically different to the second survey. But what we found as years have gone on is that the current generation of young Africans is impatient. They're in a hurry. And their position on things is changing at a pace that is absolutely unbelievable. So you have a generation in 2026 that thinks completely differently to the way the generation of 18 to 24-year-olds were thinking in 2020, and again, completely different to the way that generation was thinking only a couple of years thereafter. So that we don't break the age group, break our sample down into specific ages, but we cover a very narrow age, and I can tell you that things are changing fast. There is no question that the way a 26-year-old thinks today is the same as what a 26-year-old thought 2 years ago.
It's actually a good point that you brought in there, Ivor, specifically because the next part of the question, which is about the challenges being faced as opposed to those before, in terms of, you know, the discussions about access to opportunities and the likes. Is this something also that this specific sample and generation highlighted? Because if I look back specifically at my parents, or even from my elder siblings, because there are some of them that are now in the 50s, they had an exposure to certain particular opportunities and aspects vis-a-vis or as opposed to what I would have. And then anyone younger than me, obviously, you see that cascading sort of like difference in these opportunities. Were these also some of the insights and views that you guys could extrapolate in the latest survey?
So first of all, this is the most connected generation of all time. This is a generation that first of all sees themselves as being part of a global youth community, not just an African youth community. They're plugged into everything going on in the world with all its craziness. But just think about how different the world is today to what it was pre the pandemic. At every single level, technology is different, economic circumstances is different, priorities are different. There are massive social divides that today are not just about class and money.
We're in a world that is so vastly different. And this is a generation that's plugged into all those things. And they plugged into all those things, not just in Africa, but in the rest of the world as well. So their hopes, their aspirations, their objectives are so completely different. First of all, the level of optimism that we're seeing amongst the African youth right now is the highest we've ever seen it.
Mm.
But don't confuse that optimism with satisfaction.
Mm.
This is also a generation that is completely dissatisfied with the way their governments and their societies are being run.
Mm.
This is a generation that believes that democracy is a great form of government, but this is not a generation that believes that democracy is exercised only at the ballot box.
Mm.
Because at the same time as they're telling us that they believe in democracy, they're also telling us that a huge percentage of them have no plans to go and vote.
Mm.
So what does that tell you? It means that their optimism is because they believe they have agency and the ability to communicate and exercise their democratic rights through other means other than the ballot box.
Mm.
So this is also a generation that's telling us that the Western style of democracy that our parents that we were brought up believing in is not the style of democracy that they think is going to be right for Africa or right for them going into the future. So it raises all kinds of questions. What is that style of democracy going to look like?
Mm.
What governance system is going to be adopted by this next generation of leaders? Listen, it's very exciting, but it's also very daunting, because the one thing that is for sure is the world as we knew it, the world as our parents knew it, is not going to be the world of the future. And the world of the future is now. It's not in 10 years' time.
Mm. Mm. It's actually a good point that you're highlighting there, Ivor, because in a Namibian context, we had our local and regional elections last year. Before then, we had our own presidential elections in 2024, where we voted in our first woman president. And there was a stark difference between 2024 to 2025, specifically where a major turnout of the youth showed up for a new president, but they basically abstained from local council elections, basically, just to simplify it in that scenario for any other listener across. And precisely what you just explained is precisely the reaction between the 2 years. Now, it cascades into the next question that you also already showed or touched a little bit on, in terms of, can we see a different scenario in terms of these newer generations? Because how I identified the two elections were, that in Namibia, we've got the actual decision makers are your local councillors. In South Africa, it would be the people for the provincial government. But there's this disconnect in terms of seeing who actually provides the services, which sometimes are some of the opportunities we need. Should we look at services, or should we rather look at opportunities being provided to the new generation, the generation of now, and whoever's going to come after them?
So one of the things that this edition of the Youth Survey tells us is that the youth of Africa no longer believe their governments have the capacity to provide services.
Mm.
No longer expect their governments to provide anything other than an enabling environment so that they can be entrepreneurs, attract investment so that there can be high-paid jobs and provide their own reality. I mean, look at what has happened in so many places in Africa where governments cannot provide services. As soon as there's a little bit of economic advancement, as soon as people can afford to, they've gone off the grid.
Mm.
They've managed ways to provide their own electricity. They manage ways to fix their own roads.
Mm.
We're no longer in a dependency culture on this continent. And I think that you're 100% correct. The language of government providing services as opposed to government providing opportunities is exactly the pivot that we're trying to, that we need to achieve here. As soon as governments realize that their role is to create an enabling environment and get out of the way, I think you will find that the whole trajectory on this continent is going to change. And what the youth of Africa are telling us, and they're telling us this across the continent, is that they're not expecting services any longer.
Getting into our last question, Ivor, there is something that the Africa Youth Report also confirms or actually reaffirms from other particular reports I've myself had read. For example, one of them is one of Africa Barometer's assessment, for example, on Namibia in terms of looking at the economic opportunities accessibility between people in two different spectrums of an economic position, meaning if you don't have a job and you don't have access to money, you assume that your local politicians are corrupt. That's one of the examples that they pitch there. And on the opposite spectrum, if you have access to money and you have a job and your life is going okay-ish, you don't think anything of any notion of corruption. Is this also part of the aspects that we see from this year's Africa Youth Report?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that one of the biggest kind of wake-up calls is that the African youth see the issues relating to security and safety and terrorism are all big aspects in their lives. But it all goes back, it all stems to access to jobs. It all stems to access to entrepreneurial enablement. And the minute you solve the economic challenge, then all of the security and safety issues solve themselves. Unfortunately, crime, drugs, corruption prey on the poorest of the poor. And as soon as we lift people's living standards, make people confident in their ability to look after themselves, then a lot of those challenges get dealt with. I think that we're at a point in the trajectory of the continent where a generation of people that can look after themselves is no longer optional. And we need to be focusing all our effort moving forward into creating an environment for well-paying jobs, access to capital for entrepreneurs, and we need to be harnessing the power of the youth of Africa. And I think that one of the things that Namibia is kind of a leader in is Namibia is one of the few countries on the African continent that has seen the youth as an asset. And many countries in Africa have seen their youth as a problem that needs to be managed. And, you know, for very good reason, when we surveyed Namibia in 2024, one of the things that stood out was that it was amongst, the youth in Namibia was amongst the most optimistic on the continent. And part of the reason for that is because they felt part of the growth and development of their country. I think that there's nothing that's perfect. So I'm sure that there are a lot of people in Namibia that will say that the way that the youth are treated in Namibia is not perfect. But I can tell you, it's exponentially better than elsewhere on the continent. And sometimes one must celebrate the fact that you're better off than others. But it shows in the way Namibia is moving forward and developing. The levels of entrepreneurship amongst the youth in Namibia is extremely impressive compared to the rest of the continent. And I think that you already start from a much higher base than many other countries on the continent.
Ivor, I know we just had these final three particular questions, but just one of the particular key things have been that in Namibia's case, for example, they rolled out the NDP6, which has a great youth perspective, cascading through that national development policy document. Is there any particular indications from across the rest of the continent, perhaps, where some of the other respondents that would have been surveyed have any notion, any idea, or any, any awareness in their own countries of such particular national developmental planning? In a formal document being promoted left, right, and center in their own nationalities?
So, you know, there are a few isolated cases, but nowhere to the extent that Namibia has achieved this. You know, Namibia and South Africa could be argued to be so similar in nature And I mean, there was a time when they were one entity, but today, when you look at the way the youth feel in South Africa compared to the way the youth feel in Namibia, they could be a complete continent apart.
Mm.
South Africa is a complete outlier. The youth in South Africa are probably the most pessimistic in Africa. They believe that their country is going in the wrong direction. They believe that their governments are going in the wrong direction. They believe that the whole continent's going in the wrong direction. Whereas in Namibia, I think you would find that the situation is completely different. So there are very, very few examples of countries that have embraced their youth the way Namibia has. And I think that there's a lot of lessons for the rest of the continent. What the youth of Africa is telling us in 2026, though, is they're not going to be waiting for their governments.
Mm.
They're not going to be waiting for the leadership to start engaging with the youth. The youth are going to be engaging with their leadership and ensuring that their demands are met, whether it's through the ballot box or through other means.
Mm. Mm, 100%. On that particular note, Ivor, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners. If there's any final particular contribution that you've probably forgot or that I forgot to ask, you can still add it in before we conclude our discussion.
I think we've covered the main themes. We've covered the main issues. I think that if there's anything else that I want to raise, it is the fact that Namibia is in a league of its own. In the context of a lot of the engagement issues with the youth. And I think that Namibia has an important role to play to celebrate some of the things that are going right, to fix some of the things that are going wrong. And there's a big role for the Namibian youth to play in terms of engaging with youth around the continent and opening this dialogue around how they too can engage their governments for the betterment of the entire society.
100%. Thank you very much, Ivor Ishakovitz, for taking the time to talk to us here on this afternoon session of The Home Run. And that brings us to the end.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past,
and
it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
Welcome back. So, youth and, youth and Africa, but for some reason, the discussion zoned in a lot on Namibian youth. But, one thing that I've come to learn about point of views on a lot of different topics, especially whether it's social, cultural, or development, especially economic discussions with the African continent, is it's kind of difficult to talk about Namibia's economic problems that Namibia is going through without talking about neighboring countries, that are also experiencing the same problem. And before you know it, you are looking at the discussion from an African perspective.
Yeah.
So, first of all, I think one thing that Mr. Ivo got right was that every time that we talk about the youth being the future leaders of tomorrow, we have the most youthful population, where we have the best population replacement ratio and all that employable, large workforce. But and that brings us to that word that you recently just started finding a little irritating, and that is because of all this, potential.
Mm.
This is all showing
potential.
But the thing is, but that brings us to the question: are we using that potential? And then it becomes a whole different discussion.
Are we trying to unlock that potential?
Yeah. Because this potential is fleeing the continent.
Not just that, Hamoud. Just before
we actually started with a home run right now.
Yeah.
I had a quick chat there with the two guests that came in for the discussion,
yeah.
you know, for the Friday discussion that always takes place before we start.
Yeah.
And I cited to them, look, they're both still teenagers, yeah. 15 and 16, both two different high schools as well. And I asked them one question in terms of, do both of you already know what you want to be when you finish
yeah.
high school?
Yeah.
And they both said, in a way, yes, yes. Yeah. And then I told them, listen, remember, if you're going to go to university, it's going to give you a lot of freedoms, but it's also, you'll technically be thrown into a very big, deep pond that says, now plan your life. It's not just about going to university.
Yeah.
You also have to now start acting like an adult. Or like an adult that's going through some sort of a qualification phase up until you reach 21. And then you must obviously an adult in Namibian law.
Yeah.
But it's discussions like that. Then I didn't ask them what they wanted after that.
Yeah.
Because it was a discussion of how the youth tomorrow, the people that I consider the youth are the people that are still in high school. If you are finished with high school and you're in university, you are not youth in my eyes. Okay, yes, the official ranking in Namibia, which classifies us from 15 to 45, now comma, I say comma, because the statistics, the national census,
yeah.
classified youth from 15 to 34.
Yeah.
And then from 35 to 49,
mm-hmm.
that is now sort of like Namibia's most, you know, that's technically the most employed part of Namibia's population.
Yeah.
But we technically count as the supposed adults,
yeah,
inverted commas. We are the adults in the equation.
Yeah.
But the National Youth Fund, at the end of last year, went and extended from the age of 39 to the age of 45, they extended to incorporate a whole bracket of Namibians who wish to make use of that National Youth Fund. You know, the National Youth Fund that's there for ideas and new businesses for the youth and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was extended to 45. But if NSA gives a different discussion on what the youth is, a different description in Namibia,
yeah.
Namibia Statistics Agency, and the National Youth Fund and the Ministry of Finance decides to go and reclassify what is youth from 39 to 45, where are we? Varsadons? Which description do you then apply? Which one?
I'll side with the one that has money.
Okay, so it's Ministry of Finance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay, now start off from pairing the discussion of opportunities and, let's say, those avenues. Now, Ishikovic's cites, obviously, this is a continental perspective that's taking place. And yet, each of those continental perspectives, Helmut, there are similarities between the countries. Similarities in terms of, I'll actually start off with one of the first things that are cited here, for example, like in the executive summary part, the international influence and alliances. If we start from Namibia's particular perspective.
Yeah.
Who are some of the high profile people that came to Namibia? We had the Russian delegation that came in May, or is it in April, that was here?
When was the Indian Prime Minister here?
End of last year. Okay, so let's take it from last year, when President Nandindite was terms started. So at the start of last year, we had China's Foreign Minister, Wang Yi, visiting. Start of that year, I remember, because it was Justicia and I there. Then we had Prime Minister Narendra Modi coming to Namibia. Then we had, at the first half of this year, the Russian delegation to extend, not to extend, but to advance Namibia and Russia's bilateral relations. And then President Nandindaitwa went to China first in last month, and immediately afterwards, starting this month, she went to South Africa. So what this technically symbolizes, what I'm showing to people, these are basically the BRICS representations. This is the BRICS. These five visits, or you can call them main visits, but these are the BRICS representations.
Yeah.
Even though South Africa, technically, we basically know each other. I mean, Ishikovitz also cited it. We basically know each other. Us and us as Namibia, them as South Africa, we know each other. We like those relatives that you don't call even, but when you guys show up at a family meeting, at a family event, let's say like at AU, you're like, hey, how you doing? And, you know, people are just happy to see each other again.
That's why I keep referring to us as a, you know, former conjoined twin. You know, we just separated via the, you know, resolution 435 surgery. And it was very precise, but the, you know, it left a, you know, a few scars over the Orange River.
Yeah, no, it's still there. That Orange River sky is still there. But it's also like how us in Botswana.
Yeah,
Botswana tries to be like overly friendly with us, and we're like, but we don't understand this relations. You know, this family situation. We don't understand this.
Look, man, like I think that's one thing that you know, that makes family relations very interesting.
Yeah.
That you know, every family has internal squabbles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that we have squabbles, guys. Just letting you know.
Yeah. So, but if you want to, you know, if you want to unite them, just fight one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then they'll all come together to fight you. After they're done with you, then that's when they'll go back to fighting each other.
And then they will even say, can you believe he even had the audacity to argue?
That's why wherever they say, you know, wherever there's a family fight, I would rather pull my chair, get my popcorn, than join that fight.
You'll see me standing at the bray. I'll just walk away.
Join me when you're done.
Yeah. And remember to dust yourselves off, ne? We don't want you looking like dust here.
Yeah, but yeah. So foreign influence.
Look, in essence, I can't. No one has come out extensively to put a finger on foreign influence in Namibia.
Yeah,
but I should rather say that there is greater attention being thrown at us as Namibia.
Yeah,
greater attention specifically it is surprising to hear. From a different African perspective, you know, from Mr. Ishikovitz highlighting specifically from a different African perspective, his perspective, and even his organization's perspective, how Namibia is seen. Because the positivity, the optimism that he cited, if you go and ask now any youthful person now on the street, mm-hmm. how optimistic are you? They're like, what? What are you talking about? What are you saying, Dwight? They'll just be focusing on their immediate needs. Definitely. Yeah. Most of us in Namibia, we were there.
We just want to talk about, okay, now.
Yeah, the now. Do I have airtime? Do I have data on my mobile phone? Am I in the mood for this Friday? Am I hanging out with my buddies or not? At what level? Because remember, they measured 18 to 24-year-olds.
Yeah.
There could be a 19-year-old who's doing a casual job in a retail store.
Yeah.
Or there could be an unemployed 21-year-old who's on university, having to stress about exams and registration that's going to start at UNAM or IUM or NAS next week in August. You know, they don't know if they passed. Now, recently in June, the whole July is like chewing off their nails. And now they've got to hope that, you know, that they can at least make it to their second semester, whichever year they are. Or you will get like a freshly graduated person, age of 24, because remember you need to join when you become 19 university in Namibia. So I'll use the 3-year template. If you're at IUM and NAST, 3 years up to 21. If you're obviously UNAM, we know you guys will be there until you're 23. I'm just throwing in the extra year, you know, for safekeeping, you know, for good timekeeping. But let's take the last level, 24. 24-year-old who recently graduated, but you're also unemployed. So you have the skill, but you don't have the opportunity yet to show the case the skill. Now you're sitting with frustrations at home because your parents, what was that discussion you and I and David had in yesterday's show? You just graduated. Now the family is asking, okay, so when is it going to happen?
Oh, yeah.
When's the money flowing, you saw?
That was David who was like, you know, they're looking at you like you committed some kind of crime.
And like, look at this guy. He took the money. He studied. Like, he got the graduation.
Yeah, like, where did we go wrong?
Yeah. Where's the job?
Yeah, where's the job?
Yeah. So that particular, and that's oppression, eh? So I'm speaking about a pressure pushing when you're 18, because now you have to make decisions about what am I doing the next year when I become 19.
Yeah.
And there are pressures that are happening at the end. For example, if you finish studying. But what about the other Namibians? You know, like the rural communities, like the street kids, when we did the vulnerable child, the child care and protection discussion about that report, you know, at the start of this week. What about those kids, Helmut? How did, in that report, the ministry cited, Ministry of Gender Equality cited that they try to, ensure that no children fall through gaps or cracks in the systems. But how sure are we? Do we see a pathway that they get into a safe family scenario that is a nurturing scenario that then gives them the optimism to achieve their dreams as a young Namibian? Or do they get exposed to further negatives and further, suffer further in terms of their own particular development? You then get to like practical examples like the one that I explained 2 weeks back when I went to my sister in the Rehoboth, Helmut, where I, when I described while we were busy loading up onto my brother's baki, and my sister said, "Don't look, guys, but you can see the collection of kids behind me." Mm-hmm. Was sitting at the gate at the house across from the house that my sister was renting. And I couldn't understand. One of the kids, it was like a chronic cough. You know, when someone has a cough that isn't going away, but you can see that's another issue, something to do with the lungs.
Yeah.
But it was a cough that just sounded weird for a young kid. And I'm talking about, these are 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds sitting grouped together at this gate. And then my sister said, "Don't look, guys, but that is the substance that they consume here in the town, in Rehoboth. It's known as rocks or something of that name is its name. In my eyes, it probably sounds like crystal meth, because that's the other name for crystal meth. Or it's the other name for the thing that was brought from South Africa, known as tuk, that came from the Western Cape, which is also crystal meth, basically. So, and it's a bunch of boys, bruh. It's like 13-year-olds, 12-year-olds sitting... Yeah, across from the house, literally across from us like this. Now, if you're going to ask me, where's the police? Please, I didn't see one Empolbaki that whole day when we were busy driving up and down, moving furniture up and down the town. I didn't see one Empolbaki, but I know where the police station is in Rehoboth. It's also very easy to identify. Now, scenarios like that helps to feed perspectives that are contained within this report. For example, what optimism do youths like that see, for example, in a setting in Namibia? Then you go to the region of Hartab, in the region of Hartab. Then you go to the town of Rehoboth, in the town of Rehoboth. So you cascade from a national view to a regional view to a local view, localized view. Then you realize, what are the evils? What are the challenges? What are the problems? And potentially, how does that cascade in terms of feeding the future for Namibia? Ensuring that Namibia has this, this turnover of prosperous youth coming forward. And when I say prosperous, it's a pretty broad label. It has to be things like, you at least should have finished high school, finished past it. Then you can look at your destiny going forward, your future.
Yeah.
And you should be healthy. That's the second thing also. You should be well fed, nutrition, access to food.
Yeah.
Even though you and I, we've proven, specifically like the financial inclusion discussion and yesterday's discussion, if it's about, if you don't have the means to grow your own food, then you need the means to buy the food. And if you don't have the means to buy the food, to what extent then does financial inclusion basically count as a factor, count as a defining indicator? It is a greatly defining indicator in the sense that if the person has the money or access to the money, but in the scenario that they don't have access to the money and that they know that a loved one or a support system, which is a parent, doesn't have access to adequate enough financing, then technically that person will be stumped. They will have a stumped physiology.
Standard growth.
Yeah. Standard growth, yes. Yes, not stumped. They will have standard growth. They, you will see specifically bone, bone to muscle variations.
So there'll be obvious signs of
malnutrition. There will be obvious signs of that. There will also be other further signs specifically. You can sometimes see how a misalignment of personal goals also look like. For example, spending money on you know, recreational substances versus spending money on advancing certain particular positive habits. What I mean by that, a positive habit would be, for example, rather buying food than spending money on alcohol or recreational narcotics. And the youth get exposed to these things in between. Now, imagine the picture, how much since you and I are greatly exposed only to Windhoek youth and Windhoek scenarios and Windhoek's particular ecosystem. Imagine now the picture in every region. And every region looks different from what I now just described from Rehoboth and Windhoek. Every region is unique in its own context. And then you've got on the, you've then got to find the common denominator in terms of what is the positivity? What is the single common denominator in positivity from the various 14 regions of Namibia? And what does it say? And then we probably would find they either don't know. It might be like that Capital Projects counselor who said, I don't know. What project are you talking about? It could be a scenario of they do know or they are working towards some sort of a future for themselves, i.e. either already being employed, either already studying, or i.e. they've probably already graduated, the three scenarios that I explained at the start. Or it's the complete opposite of those three. They are in a serious doom spiral themselves. I'll leave it there for now. For some reason, I've got a rush of energy. I think it's the peanuts I had.
Oof. I forgot to, you know, got to pick some on my, you know, on my way home.
Yeah.
Look, I'm still stuck on the point of view, more like, you know, the perception with regards to how we look at the problems, you know, like it was pointed out, you know, in the audio, and also it's also referenced in the report a lot. And that's when we say, okay, the youth, are we talking about, you know, future leaders of tomorrow, 10, 20 years, or the youth that are we here today? And I think we have always, we often look at, okay, where are we going to be in 2050? Okay, yeah, you know, how about we just focus on now?
Yeah.
You know, and I find it fascinating that, you know, and I never actually connected the two dots with regards to how we talk about the future, as in, you know, we have, you know, Agenda 2030, you know, Vision 2030, Agenda 2063.
Mm.
Like, we have, you know.
We even have to ask Namibian youth, like, do they know what Agenda 2063 even is?
Look, I think what we need here is specs. What we have on Faircake, which is.
You're starting again now. You're starting again. Yeah, at least you said this one right. Faircakers.
Yeah, Faircakers.
Faircaker. Binoculars, Fairkijker.
Oh.
You've got to, it's got a flow. Afrikaans is like German. It's just got a flow. When an African, when you ask an Afrikaans speaking person to speak German, you will see them butchering. Like you've been butchering Afrikaans for the past 3 months. You will see them butchering the same way German. Yeah. But don't worry.
Yeah.
Okay, it's probably because with German you've got to recognize the feminine and masculine variations of the language.
Or they also have, you know, especially nouns are categorized in feminine and masculine.
Yeah, Afrikaans is
Only two categories.
Yeah, Afrikaans is like English. It's, you can standardize it. You can only go informal and you can only go formal.
Formal, that's it.
That's it. It's like English. You can either go informal or you can just go formal. And you can have conversational throughout.
Why are many European languages like that, though? I mean, you have this division of feminine and masculine, and feminine and masculine for some. You have the neutral one, which is the neuter. Mm-hmm. And now you have to understand these nouns in the, you know, which nouns are feminine, which nouns are neuter, which nouns are masculine, and in their, you know, how to use them in past, present, and future. and how to use them in singular and plural.
As long as you didn't have to deal with Mandarin, which has which has an alphabet of 300,000 characters. I've got the whole alphabet, né? With its calligraphy and its pinyin is written out in the letters so that we can read it, you know.
Yeah, like the English alphabets that we
use. Yeah, it's written out in pinyin with its tone, and 300,000 is.
We have what, like about 26 in English?
We just have 26. And standard.
Even that, we're still going. What comes after Q? There are just 26.
Do you know that what comes after Q and what comes after, is it I? No? Yeah, after I.
Yeah.
It's three spots. It's after I. It's immediately after when you get to I, J, K.
Yeah.
Then you have to go, is it L, M, N, O or is it L, N, M, O? People always stop there.
Like, okay, what comes? And they're just 26. Finally, they're just 26.
Yeah.
Let alone a thousand or more.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to this discussion, I feel like we have on fair cakers when we should be putting on specs.
Yeah.
Because we are, you know, we should start on the focusing on
the now. Yeah.
And when we talk about the past, we more often talk, you know, it's either where we were during the liberation struggle and where we are going to be after, in 2063. Like, what happened to now?
That's just the thing that's missing.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to point of views in not just in the way that we talk about development, but also development here at home, but how we also talk about foreign relations of different African countries. And on page 22, there are, there's something that sort of like encapsulates her, according to this report, the youth's point of view on how we should talk about, the type of conversation that we should have in terms of African countries, in terms of their foreign policies and foreign relations and the disadvantages that comes out of it. Like the key focal points are more often missed. And I feel like that's very important to point out. What they point out is foreign influence, Africa's youth want partners, not patrons, which I thought was like, okay, now that's an interesting one. Now, for much of the past decade, a discussion of Africa's foreign relations has been dominated by influence. Is China replacing the United States as Africa's preferred partner? The conversation more often goes into the directions of that question. And then another aspect of that discussion, similar to the previous question of is China replacing the United States as Africa's preferred partner, is Russia gaining grounds? Are former colonial powers losing relevance? And this is this conversation of former colonial power losing relevance has been more often in reference to France and what's going on in East Africa,
West Africa.
Yeah, especially the Sahel region these days. So the conversation goes in that direction. Now, and then the report goes on to say that the 2026 African Youth Survey suggests this may not be the most useful questions. Young Africans are not interested in geopolitics, but they appear far more concerned with the practical realities that shape their lives, like jobs, infrastructure, economic opportunities, and the cost of living.
Mm.
When they think about international partnership, many are asking less about ideology and more about whether this partnership will improve their prospects.
Which also feeds into what Anacleta met there in Rundu. For that nuclear bill.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Where Anacleta was asked straightforward by the community, what does it do to my life? We have to be practical in some cases. Instead of approaching things with like a convoluted, heavy loaded,
too technical,
technically languaged explanations. Yeah. For example, like that one time that I asked about the data protection at the cybersecurity bill discussion at NIPAM, start of the year. And I was told, well, Namibia is a country with sovereign identity, but we don't have such legislation. Why could we just not look at what the EU has, Since the EU is becoming one of our largest trade partners alongside South Africa and China, the EU is just growing every day, every month. Why could we just not look at the GDPR as a best case scenario? We didn't. We had to wait for the UN scenario. For the UN, fueled by a country, which is Russia, because Russia most provided that particular starting point or motion or whatever they call it there at the UN level, that the UN should have a cybersecurity particular perspective and develop, what is the thing's name? What do they call those things? A UN convention on it. This was a UN convention, the cybersecurity thing. And develop a UN convention on it. Now we need to define what is cybersecurity for us. Instead of, we could have just looked at what the South Africans have, what do the Chinese have, what is does the EU have. And we tailor something because our economies are tied to those three major economies.
Yeah.
Which then cascades into yesterday's discussion that we also had yesterday, specifically about the EIDs, the electronic IDs.
Yeah.
We have to ask the question, Helmut, how mobile is Namibian youth? Because of an EID scenario, will allow a Namibian youth person, that 18 to 24, we're sticking to the discussion. Do you want us to use Namibia's youth definition of the youth or stick to the Sir Report's definition of the youth?
Let's bring it home.
So we stick with ours?
Yeah.
Okay. So we can assume that between 15 to 35, there's going to be a whole bunch of that youth that is employed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you, do you think a major part of that youth have the opportunity to buy a ticket and fly to Bali tomorrow?
Well, part of me wants to really, really want to say yes, they do. But then the NSA 2023 Labor Force Statistics will look at me and say, you do realize that a bunch of the people that are categorized as employed are getting way less to afford food, let alone a vacation.
Yeah. And in that category, even of that labor force report, the NSA states there as well that there's a tranche of Namibians who are older than 30.
Yeah.
That are the majority of the employed Namibians.
Yeah.
So they run from 30 up to 49. Not just 49. Yeah. The massive tranches between that bracket, that 20-year bracket.
Yeah.
Which then highlights sort of like a counterposition to the youth bulge that Namibia has, because 72% of Namibia is 35 and under.
Mm.
That's where more than 70% of Namibia is. We then sit with a scenario, Helmut, of trying to understand, okay, how does the money flow from the unemployed peoples, which is the financial inclusion discussion we had earlier in the week. How does the money cascade from those that make the money in the economy down to those that don't have access, that don't have jobs or the employment, or who have access to an employed person, but the employed person shares something with them only on payday? That's the reason why I asked the question about the Bali reference.
Mm-hmm.
How many Namibians do you think exist in this country that can regularly fly every year to another country? It'll probably be less than 1%.
Forget Bali. Let's just talk about
Okay, let's take the cheapest option.
Faya National Park.
No.
Okay.
To fly, you have to fly. The reason why I'm showing that is because this is a Namibian that'll be aware of like the international relations and international influence dimension.
Yeah.
Because if you were going to get on a plane right now, Helmut, and you did not know that Ukrainian drones are striking as far into Russia as Moscow,
mm-hmm.
and who's the other city? They haven't struck yet in St. Petersburg, but they've struck major strategic like oil refineries and other particular industries, installations in Russia. Now, you want to go on holiday in the middle of the year to Russia. Let's say you want to go to Sochi. And in between, there's a threat of drones that can strike passenger aircraft, Russian passenger aircraft, because you've got to fly from Moscow to Sochi. Would you still fly if you knew that reality of that your personal safety would be at risk, would you still fly?
Okay, I'll first have to find out because, one, they must use a different flight path because if they are using a flight path that crosses a war zone, nope.
Do you know how far Sochi is from what was the thing that was confiscated?
Is it Crimea?
Yeah, Crimea. Do you know how far Sochi is from Crimea?
No.
It's like a couple of a few hundred, like 500 kilometers away.
Yeah.
Now, on the other side of Crimea, you would get a few hundred kilometers and then you get the Russia-Ukraine border. So I'm asking you again, would you still fly? It's not about the other technicalities of flight control and flight safety and airspace safety.
Yeah, you know, I'm pointing that out because, I'm not sure which year was that, but a passenger airplane was hit by a missile in that.
It was a Dutch flight.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying when it comes to war zones, I don't know I don't know how that happened, but from my understanding, flight paths are supposed to change as soon as a place becomes an active war zone.
Yeah, so. I assume it's a no if you knew.
Definitely not. not blowing up, being blown up to smithereens.
Yeah. And let's say you accidentally make use of Emirates and what's the other one? Qatar Airways that flies into an active war zone currently as we are. Now, you technically would also not say no.
Wait, they fly to Ukraine?
No, not to Ukraine. The block plus block, it was unblocked.
Okay.
Because one of the biggest concerns has been Dubai and Doha are too close to Iran.
Iran, yeah.
Iran's missiles can strike those airports and those pieces of infrastructure. Jeez. At the start of 28 February even, just immediately like the next week in March, the first week of March, drone blasts and targets were struck on that Dubai airport, that massive airport. Yeah. That airport was hit. Now, do you think you want to fly any kind of airplane on a holiday? If you're a Namibian, we're obviously looking at the rates of, in terms of the perspectives from the report, now, you also get an insight in terms of the awareness level of these African youth. You know, how aware are they about global events and developments?
Mm-hmm.
Global events and developments that also impact their countries, the kind of people that they vote for, the governments of their countries that interact with these major powers that you and I have now just been whittling, you know, making mention of. And you see, a lot of these people, they are aware of global developments.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the scenario. the scenario that I'm highlighting obviously has to speak towards earnings potential, access to the financing, and what you do with the financing. So far, from what I see in everyday context, for example, our biggest pressure today is the petrol price, which the minister, David and I, we sort of like dissected partially in our own commentary here, not commentary here in the studio, but they're outside at, you know, at the desks, in terms of some of the motivations that the minister was giving, Minister Amutse. Because Minister Amutse is motivating a decision of a month ago, at the end of July, which you should have provided at the start of July, meaning at the end of June. However, slightly deviating from the point there, our biggest pressure today, right now, for the Namibian economy, which most of the youth probably would now become more aware of, is the sharp influence that the petrol price will have on daily goods, meaning affordability and ability to survive any particular financial shocks. So far, the government is absorbing a lot of the shock. And there's a good point that Minister Amutse made, specifically where he said, towards the end of today's address, that if that absorption shielding mechanism of the government was not active, that emergency response measure they deployed, diesel could have cost $30. Petrol could have cost $28 in Namibia. So that would have had real shocks on doing business, access to opportunities, access to daily food supplies, access to daily other supplies that make up your life, it would have significant shocks on the Namibian economy. So he made a good point in explaining that. He explained it a bit late, but he made a good point. But we obviously have to now see how Namibia is trying to pursue the final investment decision on the oil. Because now it seems like, Ahmed, because in this new month of August, we're going to have, I think, one or two. There's going to be the mining expo, and then there's going to be the oil and gas conference. Because oil and gas is part of mining. So we're going to see what messaging comes out of the mining sector's main particular events or flagship events here in Namibia coming up now in August. I'm going to say when they're going to happen. Usually I know that the oil and gas conference comes a little bit earlier than the mining expo. Or vice versa, whichever one. I mean, they both represent private sector, basically.
You know, a replacement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, one of you know, and what is something that goes back, you know, in terms of how generations criticize the younger generation. I think it goes back to, you know, to Aristotle or Socrates about 2000 years ago. You know, if you can trace the statement, this generation is doesn't want to work, they're lazy.
Yeah.
Well, what that was said by the Greeks 2000 years ago about the youth of their time. And
what did they have? Smart tablets? Smart stones?
You know, maybe you were just criticized for not being good at, you know...
running? What was the activity that the ancient Greeks did?
No, let me just take you to...
ancient. Wasn't it walking around naked, their best pastime?
Hey, come on, they had...
They didn't technically have clothes, Hamut. You and I know that.
They had the toga, which is my favorite.
Yeah, that was but it in terms of clothing.
Okay, well, you make it fair.
At least the Romans, look, the Romans did advance, you know, fashion to an extent, because when the
okay,
Romans...
No, these are not the Greeks, those are the Egyptians.
Look at them, they technically also didn't make sense.
The instructions being given there by the teacher.
It's I before flee, except for after... C.
It's I before E. You know, when you're writing, believing and receiving, that you know that it's I before. Now, look, Ned TikTok. Ned TikTok.
Imagine you're telling now an ancient Egyptian. It's an I, a literal I before flea, and you're now sitting there thinking like,
what's going on here?
Yeah.
Look. The thing is, the reason why I brought up, you know, the whole this generation is lazy is because every generation. Have heard that from the from people from their elders.
Yeah,
they were called lazy and all kind of things as to with regards to why they were not getting what was expected of them by society.
Mm.
Except one thing that we fail to to compare is the economic and political environments these these generations transpired in. But we'll continue on the other side of the.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was... Oh, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm. Just get more eyes. Anyways, long story short. Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long. Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Mr. Ivor Ishukovits, thank you for taking the time to joining us here during the discussion and specifically...
We've already had that. He just decided to sneak itself in, sneak itself in. So, where was I?
So, we're still basically on the Greeks, ancient Greeks, and lazy generations.
Lazy generation. But what we fail to, I feel like every generation, when it calls a younger generation lazy, because they did not get some kind of accomplishment that they got at their time, by the time that they reached a certain age.
Mm.
You have to look at a lot of things here. What type of economic environment did you grow up in? What was the inflation rate? Mm. What were the type of, how easy was it to get opportunities back then? Whether you're looking at being trained, academic qualification and all these things. All those things have to be factored in. Now, one thing that I find fascinating about this report, especially in reference to foreign influence, is that we argue a lot about who has the best mode of leadership, socialism, capitalism. But who cares? The question is, does it work?
Not just that. If we filter your question further, does it work?
Yeah.
What is the standard of living on the ground?
Yeah.
How do people live? Do they have money in their pockets and bank accounts? Can they go to school? Can they access medical facilities? The basic stuff.
Just the basic. I think, too much technical jargon and prioritizing ideology instead of just looking at what's taking place on the ground.
Yeah.
Is the reason why we keep running around saying, this type of GDP. We have this type of GDP. We are doing very well on paper. But if you go to people on the ground, they'll be like, I don't know what you're talking about, man.
Yeah, which was the Afrobarometer report about the one that says, at the one end, since I don't have access to money, I'm unemployed, I believe the government is corrupt. But on the other end, I have access to money, I have a job. I don't care who is corrupt. I'm fine. I've got mine.
So the more people are, the more well people are doing economically, the less they are to
be bothered about what happens in public sector.
What happens in public sector.
Yeah, as because they know the system is there.
Yeah.
They don't have to worry about the system. They technically, in a way, don't rely much on it, but they do derive a benefit from it. So they're fine. Life is good. They continue with life.
Yeah, so forget the ideology. Just let's focus what's needed.
Yeah, what's working.
What's working.
And what is working.
Yeah. How can we mobilize resources to what problems are we going through? How can we solve them? And where are we going to get the resources? How can we mobilize these resources? It should be that simple. But the thing is, I feel like we are now caught in more of an administrative procedural, let's get everything right. That's why we, this is something that we basically got from, we adopted from the West.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the reasons why China is very good at implementing things. Mm-hmm. And we are very good at debating what to name the things that we'll implement in 2063. Don't worry, one day we will name it. But for now, one day we'll build it. But for now, let's talk about what to name it.
I even want to get into a more micro scenario. Just during the ad break, dear listeners, Helmut sort of like reminded me of the story that I keep telling of my uncle who earned 300 Rand back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Just to let you know, guys, he was at that stage technically still like a young man in his 20s or early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Because it also depends on specifically when my eldest cousin, his eldest son, was born, which would have been at the end of the 70s, towards the end. Yeah, so it would have been in the 80s. But in the 80s, he earned 300 Rand.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've said multiple times, he had the opportunity to pay rent with his wife, who is now my aunt. They could still buy groceries. They would still be able to save money. He would still be able to afford a, you know, a car, a mode of transport, and still have money to put away for saving. If you go and look at many of the young people in Namibia, specifically in the Windhoek economy today, and you ask how much, what level or capability do you have to save money? Many Namibians, many of those young, same, similar young Namibians that have, that now currently have jobs will say, I can barely save.
Yeah.
They will say that, I can barely save. I did it once with a few of our colleagues here. Some of them have left off already, but some of them had said, I can barely save. Now, let's flip that discussion also on its head. I then went and assessed my uncle's earnings at that stage, 300 Rand in the 80s, in terms of what would it have been today in 2026 in terms of earnings. That 300 Rand translated to 37,000 Namibian dollars. That 37,000 accounts for direct inflation from the 1960s.
Jeez.
Up until 2026. The rate of inflation that was spread across that period for every year was 7.something%. And the increase between the 300 Rand and the 37,000 was at least like a 12,000% increase that was observed. So when I'm describing things like this to you guys, dear listeners, there's an exact reason as to why I asked Ivor the question I did, the first question, Amut, the generational divide. This survey, or this part one of this report, because I still have to wait for part two. Part one speaks towards, in a way, yes, they break it up into certain particular, let's call them talking points, which are six of them. No, seven of them. Seven major talking points. But when we come to the one about opportunities and the future, which is Afro optimism and future outlook, in Namibia, it's grounded specifically on, will I be able to earn money? Will I be able to earn money? They look at things about the direction of their country, the direction of their country's economy, and particularly what this then translates to in the rest of the continent. Now, Mr. Ishikovitz described something of Namibia. I have seen glimpses of it, the optimism aspects, but I've also seen a lot of the direct opposite of it, the negativity, the pessimistic views, which come through not just from household leaders, like parents of a household, but it also comes through the most junior participants of a household, the children in the household. In many cases, there are children that are just pessimistic for how Namibia or the Namibian government is technically working for them. Now, it's the reason why I've continuously beat on the drum of local councillors and local authorities, because I can understand that it's impossible for, what's that minister? A minister from gender equality, Emma Kantema. It's impossible for Minister Kantema to respond from Windhoek in Aus in the south. It's impossible for to respond on one aspect, on one item. It's impossible. It's impossible also, for example, for our favorite minister, Minister Sangwasa, to respond to, a specific incident. Let's, for example, say it's now with Uis that was now declared a village council, which will now become a formal settlement as well. It's impossible for him to respond to every single particular issue of Uis. But if Uis is a council, it's that council's mandate and their responsibility to basically work for the community of Uis. You can't expect Minister Sangwasa or even Minister Samwani to come from where? To come listen to you, the community person. The first thing is first, ne? You didn't vote for any of these ministers. Let's be honest also. None of us voted for the ministers. We voted for, you voted for a party and the party's presidential candidate. Mm. Just so the people know that as well. You didn't vote for any of these ministers.
Yeah, so you
I'm just leaving that question mark there for you.
You voted for them by proxy.
Not even by proxy, because the proxy would have been you. You would have elected a proxy. And that would have been impossible because you probably might have been arrested for election fraud. The description has to work the other way around.
That's a tight one.
The description has to work the other way around. Yeah. But it feeds into the response, the interview that I had with Jacinta and Valentina from Namibia Institute of Democracy, NID, at the start of the year. In that discussion, Helmut, we saw a localized deep dive of why the youth didn't show up for the local authority and regional authority elections last year. So why were they optimistic about a new president in 2024?
But
they weren't optimistic about local political representation.
Which is more important in terms of...
service delivery.
And also they are on... they are more in contact with their local, you know, community representatives than they are with the central government.
Yeah.
Head of central government, basically, the executive branch.
Yeah. It's also now this, like, for example, this, I know City of Windhoek has a similar initiative, like a youth council or something of that note. I know they have something, an initiative like that. But you even have to look at how the youth parliament has prominence over the youth council initiative. The youth parliament is an initiative. The youth council is an initiative. The youth council, because one of my nieces was on the youth council for Windhoek. There is also not enough. Okay. It took me a while to realize it, but it's safe to say that many Namibians also don't realize it. Your local authorities are more important than the person sitting in the National Assembly.
Yeah.
Then the political leader you voted for. You've got to look out in terms of, if you want local procurement, which you and I love citing from the procurement tracker from IBPR.
Yeah.
If you want procurement to work from you, you've got to go look at what your municipality, town council, village council is doing. Do they have a procurement plan? Remember the requisites.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a procurement plan for the upcoming financial year? Yes or no? Is there a procurement history for procurement for projects in previous financial years? Yes or no? Is there a, what's the other one? Does that local authority have an updated and reliable internet platform or website platform? Which a website is an internet platform, yeah. A website platform that has up-to-date information on it, where you can interact and get the best particular discussions. Actually, we should have mentioned this yesterday, Helmut, in our EID discussion.
Okay.
The procurement plans. The discussions we've had previously also on the home run, specifically that you need an update in the procurement law, in the act.
Yeah.
It says there, you must have a reliable up-to-date, okay, the word, I added the word reliable, but an up-to-date website.
Yeah, but it has to be reliable because one of the requirement, you know, the requirement that they have when it comes to their procurement plans is they don't just compile information and hand it over to the public procurement policy. They also have to make it public. And one way of doing that is on their website.
Having on a website, yeah. So I will not ask anyone, just anyone, just go and see whether or not your local authority, wherever you're listening to us from as the Home Run team, here on Eagle FM, wherever you're listening to us from, if you're even in other parts of the world, go and see if those local authorities where you are based in has a website. And how up-to-date is that website? And how reliable is the information that they share on that website for you, wherever you live, that you call a community, how it works for you? Now, I know, in a Namibian context...
Dwight, I'm in a Windhoek. I went to an SOE thinking I did my homework by going through the information on their website, When I got there, they told me, you know, I used a reference to some of the information that I got on their website, which is still there now.
Mm.
Okay, now, that have not, we haven't talked about that for about 5 years now. Like, wait,
the
what?
Information that's on the website.
The information is on the website.
But they haven't spoken about it in reality.
They haven't used that
in 5 years.
Yeah.
It's probably also like with the Fisheries Observer Fund, where you and I realized there was something.
Why do you have it on your website? Now, that is in Wintu. I can only imagine.
I'm
saying this because we are very centralized.
Yeah.
So you can see that if things, if things are malfunctioning in Wintu, chances are very high are much, it's safe to assume it's much, much worse outside of Wintu.
Yes.
I mean, I came out of that institution going, oh boy, that's.
It's a train wreck.
Yeah, that's a train wreck.
Yeah. It's also some of the surprising things. Every time when I tell you that when I bump into a fan of ours, and the person is from an SOE, I'm like,
no, oh boy.
It won't be long before we start, before we mention the SOE's name. But yeah, it's an interesting thing specifically that you brought that up, Helmut, because one of the biggest concerns that some of the media advocacy groups in Namibia have is about the Access to Information Act's particular enforcement and enactment.
Yeah.
Look, it's already in operation. But it's technically not formally operationalized because you need the commission to be in existence. And the commission is dependent upon appointing the commissioner, the deputy commissioner, and all the other particular staff for that entity.
Administrative.
And that commissioner and deputy commissioner are literally on the level, I think, of an executive director, just below a minister. But they are independent from a ministry, from any ministerial influence. Now, we can't have a cluster of websites working in isolation, which is the silo operation, as being the only dispensers of actual updated information. Helmut, it's wonderful working through the Namibia Statistics Agency's website. But I want the Namibia Statistics Agency to be on the level of Stats South Africa. Stats South Africa is a ministry. NSA is an SOE. Stats South Africa can give stats about anything in South Africa. They will measure it. They will issue a report on it. It is wonderful. Just go on their website.
Mm-hmm.
Stats SA. Helmut, you will enjoy that website. You will love it. And it'll give you employment stats every month in South Africa. You will know as an economic planner, as an economic, participant in South Africa, you will know which direction that country is going. Even though they've got their things going on and some Namibians influenced some decisions also there in South Africa, like Pala Pala, you know, because we did influence. We Namibians are the core.
We just taught them a lesson that not everything that has a kettle is a farm. Sometimes it can be a bank. And then we came back.
No, Helmut. We were more like, hey, guys, we have Christmas in COVID. And then,
you know why South Africa shouldn't play with us?
Yeah, people were motivated.
Look, man. South Africa should be terrified of Namibia because we pulled that off with just ordinary Namibians. Imagine what we can do with the police, intelligence.
And no one died. Do you know what's the best part? No one died.
That's because we are a friend to all and an enemy to none. Yeah. We don't do killing. We just do, you know.
We were superbly humane. And you know what? These guys,
we're the last people you want to think of. We are talking about war crimes. No, we don't know that.
No. We don't.
Damage to property. I mean, the camera was filming, and we left it peacefully.
The lights were on, and we left them.
The mission was the money. Focus.
Yeah. The only thing was potentially that sofa. That sofa is probably the only victim.
You gotta crack a few eggs to make an omelette.
Definitely. That was a big omelette. But yeah, you know.
Look, all Ramaphosa had to do was include, I'm assuming the sofa had a zip. If he did,
all he had to do was just forget about it, cry in his corner and close the zip.
Yeah, just use, what's that, is it,
super
is it,
glue.
No, it's Velcro.
Velcro? Oh, this.
Just.
Use Velcro.
Use Velcro on a
sofa. Use Velcro.
On a presidential sofa, that's embarrassing.
Yeah. But yeah, as you can see. Yeah,
so, I mean, we're the nicest people in the world.
That's why we got asset forfeiture departments, you know. We don't call them criminals anymore.
No, no.
They just relieve you of your assets. Mm-hmm. That's all. And you still have your life. But yeah, so some of the dimensions that you can see, for example, from that thing that I described about my uncle, and even coming into a Namibian context here, Hamid, many of the questions boil down to what Namibia is currently trying to get right. Now, the reason why I also asked about NDP6 was to also try and see, would, you know, you get young people that are aware of developments in their country, political, economic, you name it, community, you name it. And then there are also young people that just don't care. They just live, you know, they're just there in a space. But they do have opinions as well and contributions that you could listen to.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to see specifically, I mean, we have to do an exercise probably here in Namibia with young people in Namibia to try and ask them, do they know what NDP6 says? Have they seen anyone, an adult, talk to them, try to talk to them or engage with them about NDP6, yes or no? I think some of the political parties might have an issue with that because probably it might bridge onto, you know, political propaganda in some cases. But you know, we live in the same country. Mm-hmm. And then primarily the discussion on international influence and alliances. Now, I'm going to put a bookmark in international influences and alliances, Helmut, because later this year, I still have to engage with someone about it, but later this year, we're supposed to see the genocide and joint declaration discussion resurface.
Yeah.
The president cited in a State of the Nation address that the debate will be brought back to parliament. Germany will be engaged, will be re-engaged on this because apparently the German government gave their blessing. I don't know how does the criminal give a blessing? I don't understand such things, but okay, you know.
I have something to actually two points that we can use in terms of around the discussion of international influence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember last year around December when the African Union went bananas when Israel had, you know, announced its recognition of Somaliland?
Mm.
Yeah. And the most recent one, which I find very interesting, is Chad's, motion to withdraw or to pull out of the ICC. This is how it came out. This is how it came out from African News.
Yeah.
Another blow to the International Criminal Court, as Chad says it will join Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, and Venezuela in starting process of quitting the tribunal. Now, one thing they pointed out here now is that the announcement came amid allegations of Chad's suspected involvement in war in the neighboring Sudan between the army and the paramilitaries.
Yeah.
I knew that, you know, it would have... That I suspected because, you know, when the EU decided to increase their economic sanctions on gold coming out of Libya, there's this Swiss NGO that outlined how this gold is supposedly leaving Libya.
Yeah.
One thing they pointed out is that this gold is suspected to be leaving the country through neighboring countries of which Egypt, Chad, and all these countries, Sudan, Egypt and Chad, those two countries popped up. And they find now through these countries that gold finds itself through the UAE and then the European market, which is why the UAE is basically caught in a very, you know, crepe storm in this whole Sudan case. But what I did not suspect in this whole discussion around Chad's withdrawal out of the ICC was the allegations of last week the Chadian foreign minister's Facebook page said the US had pressured N'Djamena to reconsider its ICC membership. But the minister later denied the US was behind the withdrawal. Rather, Chad no longer felt in step with the court as it currently operates, he said. Now, you have all these allegations of foreign influence in the decisions that are made by leaders, which is something that is not new to modern day politics. That's something that you hear, you basically find a lot. And now geopolitical influence is important in terms of having someone to back you up in your decision, especially how things are going to be voted on. And you see this even in corporate boards when it comes to voting on a decision. But every time that we talk about political influence, that's where we're looking at it from.
Yeah.
But now, don't get me wrong. That's a very important way of looking at it, because those influence like that, if it really happened, then it has a way of also it will get any citizen asking themselves one question: if this is what's happening in the political sphere, what type of influence does this foreign country have in terms of our economic activities? So the discussion then quickly becomes. A very one that is based on, I think, until someone gathers the information in a way that it's easily verifiable beyond hearsay. So this is where information now becomes very important. So if you look at page 16 of that report, for example, it looks at African continent direction. So people are being asked, is Africa, just a very simple question. And this is from 2020 going all the way to 2026. So you have green arrows pointing up in terms of obviously things going in the right direction. And you have red arrows pointing down, which is pointing to, representing the category of people that believe Africa is not going in the right direction.
And then
you have some very interesting numbers, because in 2020 you have a large number of people that believed we are not headed in the right direction, and you see the very same thing, and you see the numbers basically increase and remain constant for 2022 and 2024 before dropping to the 2020 figures in 2026. And that's just is Africa headed in the right direction? The overwhelming majority from 2020 to 2026, their point of view is no. And now, on a country level, the country direction.
It seems it's only Rwanda and Somalia. And even Ghana, up to Zambia, even.
Page 16.
Yeah, I'm still there.
National currency.
Yeah. Oh, the other one, national. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, national currency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that's more
than. Now, what's Antonio Guterres' description? Sobering reading.
Someone used it earlier today at the AUSDC on labor employment and social development engagement.
Makes for a sobering reading.
But he's saying it with a British accent, man. He's going like, it makes for a sobering reading. I'm like, what? Bruh, stop copying each other's phrases here. I think Guterres's particular sort of like take, or his famous words of how things turn out in the world,
yeah,
was definitely utilized more than once, or copied by many people after that.
Well, come to think of it, President Bumba has the same influence with Top Notch.
On you, Helmut? No one else uses Top Notch that I know.
You don't know that.
No one else that I know uses Top Notch. Only you use Top Notch. So if President Bumba has to come and have a bone of contention here between you and me,
yeah,
it's with you because of you using his Top Notch.
Top Notch. It's even nicer when you throw in the hand gestures. Top Notch.
Top Notch.
Yeah.
That video is the famous video, you know.
Here is, page 19 is my favorite of the whole report.
Yeah.
Because what it sums up basically is, I'm very good at making you famous.
Me? Yeah. Are you on me again?
Was until a couple of seconds ago.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. The most impactful events of the last 5 years. And then you have different categories here.
Yeah.
You have now the rising cost of living. 27%. Very impactful. Which makes sense. Now, political instability, 18%, especially when the countries recorded under that political instability is one of the most impactful event for the for the past 5 years. You have Burkina Faso with 44%, you have Mozambique with 36%, and you have Congo Brazzaville with 35%.
It's very surprising for Burkina Faso, especially.
I know, right?
I mean, because did you see what Traoré did just this week? He changed the military, military attire.
Wait a second. That's just for
is that for formal
I'm
ceremony?
Assuming it is because
it looked really kindergartenish.
Not just that. You do realize the British had to change their uniform from that very red, colorful, because they could be seen from kilometers away.
I know.
Now, if that uniform is just for parade and all that, that's a brilliant idea.
Mm.
But if it's for combat, definitely not for combat. You can imagine that uniform, your enemy will start laughing at you before shooting you.
I mean, I was even asking to myself, why if you're a president, why are you making the uniform dress code of the army a priority to the country?
I think for a military man, makes sense.
But he thinks that probably that the army should be like a focal point of prestige for Burkina Faso, yeah.
Well, morale boosting, obviously, in a country that's caught in a terrorism storm. So now you have a technological and digital revolution. You have now the numbers then becomes very bleak.
Yeah.
Yeah, technological/digital revolution. You have Rwanda with 19%. And you have Liberia with 15% and Ghana with 12%. And you have now increased access to essential services and resources. Democratic changes, things get even worse. International involvement in Africa. 5%. Those are the most. From the look of things here, people are more concerned with the cost of living.
Yeah, the biggest concern
the
here.
The biggest concern
is that
is can I afford food?
Is that first three categories? That's cost of living, political stability,
death from infectious diseases.
You can technically say political stability is similar to political instability.
Political stability for us.
Yeah, for us, because you are asking, are you stable? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Whereas with instability, you would be asking, are you unstable or not? Definitely there'll be a few guys going like, hey.
I'm holding an RPG. What do you think?
Yeah, you see me with a Molotov in my hand. What is your problem, you? I'm expressing myself. I'm an artist in the making. I'm a rebel without a cause. Huh?
Very creative. Molotov cocktail.
Yeah, super creative.
So, I don't think I think this is something that runs all across the board, not just in Namibia or Africa. The cost of living and economic inequality has gone, through the roof for the past, let's just say 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Especially in Western and Western influenced countries. It started becoming more apparent shortly after COVID-19. Where you have a lot of rich people becoming richer, and you have a lot of poor people becoming poorer.
Mm-hmm.
And that gap just keeps becoming wider and wider. And the thing is, these gaps usually lead to political instabilities.
Somehow they need to be closed.
Oh, yeah, they has to be closed. You end up, every time the economic inequality has widened, all you just have to do is read the history of every revolution, and you'll find that before the revolution, there was economic inequality.
And like you and I confirmed earlier this week, or was it end of last week, Namibia is still part of the one and number twos in the inequality discussion that has taken place.
Yeah.
But now that David is about to make his entrance, you can have this document, David. You can have this document. I don't know why a colleague is mumbling next to me. But yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm just showing you, Almut, about...
Sustainable Development Goals.
No, the report of it. When it came out, just look at the date.
No kidding.
No kidding. So we do have our confectionery good in somewhere next week.
Another sobering reading.
Yeah, definitely sobering reading. Definitely just to let you know, David, reading. Do you know about this guy? Just look at the date it came out.
7 July, Sustainable Development Goals 6.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. I see. Well, it's UN SDG, right?
It is.
Yeah.
And every year they bring out this report basically about...
The progress.
Tracking progress.
Yeah.
Now we have to see if they've corrected since 2024, because 2024, Guterres went like, you know what? It's a sobering reading. So technically he was slightly possibly intoxicated with developments in Russia, Ukraine.
You know the thing about UNSDG is that it's broad. Everybody knows it.
Mm.
Everybody is referencing about it. I've seen and I read a lot of policies, especially developmental policies. You can go to Ethiopia. You can go to South Africa. They always start at the high level.
Mm.
This policy is aligned with United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, Agenda 2030.
Mm.
Then they scale down.
Mm.
African Union Agenda 2063 is in line. Then they scale down to their national policies. Then they start drafting.
Mm.
Then you ask yourself a question to say, is it symbolic? Or is it really that we are not able to do that? But I was reading for last year when it came out, you realize that Namibia, we should be proud of ourselves in some area.
Mm.
Yeah, in some area we did very well. Mm. You look at education, we can debate about the quality and the impact of it. But we did well. You look
but
at
we've got literacy.
Yeah, we've got literacy. It went literacy. Up. That one should be uploaded.
We're above 80% even.
You look at the gender equality, not even US can compete with us. You know that?
Which is true.
Which is quite good. But my question always to say, why can't we focus on the real stuff?
What, like putting the money in the hand?
No, not really to say put the money in the head. Look at the project that are impacting people.
Yeah.
But if you look at the zero hunger, for example, that one is still debatable. Poverty, we are still looking at that. Yeah, but yeah. It depends on how you look at it,
yeah.
But we must also be proud of saying there are things that we did well as Namibia compared to the rest of the world. But the main issue will also come to the conversation that we are always having to say, human development, is it central? Because there's a guy, it's Dr. C, I think I cannot remember the name correctly, but he gave a very good definition of development.
Mm.
He's a practitioner of international development. And one of the things that he said that development is not complete without human beings, human development. Because the normal definition of development based on the economy is outdated. You have to complement that. That's why in any conversation, don't only look at the numbers. When people say Singapore overtake even industrialized countries beforehand, before they started doing what they are doing now, they look at the people. When you speak about China have track records of developmental, progress to say from 2025 to 2026, these are the millions of people that we took out of poverty. You talk about millions, not 3 million. From 1990 to 2013, these are the people that we took out of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a discussion that really should be expanded.
Mm.
But I was interested on what young people are saying in Africa, especially looking at that conversation.
How many people you are taking out of poverty? In Africa, we're counting how many people we're putting into poverty.
Helmut.
Okay, there are a lot of people, there are a lot of people, I believe it was a day or two ago, unfortunately, that basically risked their life to swim from Morocco to Spain.
You know,
and a lot of a lot of people died in the process.
Now, look,
every time I look at that, the question I would be asking myself is, if I was an African leader, how bad is the situation? Because if someone is saying, you know what, drowning is better than living in this country.
No, it's like you are reading my mind. You know what I was just saying now. Are you also interested in international? You know. Is my migration report?
Yeah.
One of the things is exactly what you said. I was talking to my friend. Then I give this reasoning to say, is there a big dragon in Africa? Even pregnant women, they are risking, drowning. They are risking walking through the desert to a man. You're asking yourself a question to say, is that really the issue? Is there a dragon in Africa, or is it really that people just want to go to UK? Can you really leave your kids? Look what happened. Look at this guy who won the World Cup. These are our people. Yamal. These are our people. Look at, and it's not, they did not go because of colonialism like the others who become the sons of former slaves. These are the people who went, parents are looking for better opportunities.
Yeah.
But if you look at that number, it is what caused disagreement in Europe. People were debating to say, guys, we are coming to you because you destroyed our continent. But that reasoning is beyond now. There are also things that we should also hold ourselves accountable to say. If you are saying drowning is better than living where you are, that is a very big question.
Yeah.
To say, can a pregnant woman of 6 months really leave his country, leave Gabon, North Africa? I was looking at this video of, I don't know what it happened, and I don't want to dwell into it, to one of our girls in the UK. And it's really not good. How she got there, I do not know. But the question is that, why sons and daughters of Africa are leaving the continent at the time that they are needed? Because if you go to Japan, you know, you will not find young people there.
I don't think you have to be you have to be the world's best parent to know that your kids keep running away from home.
Yeah, something is
you
not
have
right.
to ask yourself one question: what are you doing wrong? It's either you are abusing them.
Yeah,
yeah, because I've never read a story of of a child that ran away from home because the parents were very good at taking care of them.
No, there's nothing like that. No,
there's always something wrong going on, and I think on a large scale, that's exactly the problem that we're facing in Africa.
Yeah.
People are, and this keeps happening every year, and I don't think there's anyone that's
every
just
day.
Compiling.
It's every day.
Exactly, it's every day.
Yeah.
People are, people are dying trying to cross. Is it the Red Sea?
Mm. Yeah, you are right.
Yeah. And this is one of those topics that and these are the youth, by the way.
It's the Rio Grande with the U.S. in Mexico. It's the Red Sea. It's the whole Mediterranean Sea. It's there's another one.
You know, okay, just finish.
Where's the other one? Even here with us, the Zambezi River, you can ask France. France will give you a good explanation.
You know, there's something I shared. I shared on Facebook.
But before we continue.
Yeah.
USAFE's customers love combos, right? Well, for just $589 Namibian dollars, you can get 10 kilogram Champion Super Maize Meal, 10 kilograms of Bokomu Fed Cooked Flour, 10 kilograms of Marathon of Brown or White Sugar, 5 kilos of Nice Rice, plus 1 kilo of Grande Pasta. That's just $589 Namibian dollars for 5 essential products. The ShopRite Group buys bulk, so you can save. Yes, we all save at USAFE.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
And let's continue with the discussion of just one question that you have African, the future leaders of tomorrow that are saying, you know what, things in this country and collectively, what African youth are basically saying is, I would rather drown and die. Or go, even if I arrive there and be called, and be called an immigrant and face all kinds of negative, negative insults, obviously insults that are coming from anti-immigration going on in the Western world. I would rather deal with that than live here. The question, my question now every time I look at this is, just how bad is the situation at home for someone to make a decision of choosing drowning and being called all kinds of derogatory names rather than staying at home?
You know, that person thought about everything. If you see a person made that decision of saying, you think migrants who are embarking on those journeys, they do not know the consequences. They know. They weigh the options. That's the final decision. They weigh the options. Records are there. Warnings are there to say not everybody who crossed the desert to Oman reached there. The records are there to say every year, even doing business, you have this, it's not Friday by night. How do you call it? My English is running. I know it's Friday. there are these people that are doing business, crossing, assisting people, maybe having boats.
The traffickers.
Traffickers. Even if there are people that are investing in that, they also know that it's not a business that is profitable because it's quite dangerous.
It's
unpredictable, but they are also dying.
It's just they charge more money.
Yeah.
Because of the danger.
So they cover, it's like an insurance risk. A premium that you pay.
And you also look at the way those people are packed like banks.
Yeah.
And it's quite bad. Some people, they say, we are doing very well. The question is that there is always something that we need to ask to say, where is the problem?
No. Let's start with who's we.
In terms of Africa?
We are doing very well.
No. I'm saying we are doing very well in terms of when you hear a leader speaking about that. When you hear somebody who come from Europe or somebody who come from Asia open a very beautiful business in Africa, then they speak about investment in Africa, speak about opportunities, but they don't really say where are our kids, where are the future generation? It's the same question. The same question we are asking Namibia. The same question we are asking SADC. The same question we are asking Angola, to say, who is your next president in the next 45 years if your young, bright generation is here in our street asking for $1? Those are the questions that we should ask ourselves. But the relevant one is what is so difficult that people choose even if they die. There's something that I shared on Facebook. I just wanted to speak about it. The Director General of Botswana Intelligence was having an interview. Then what he said is that youth unemployment is not a national risk. There's a word that he used. I shared it on Facebook. So youth unemployment is a security threat. That's exactly what he said. It's a security threat because the younger guys, they get recruited to go and fight in Russia. Same thing.
It also happens with them.
Everyone in South Africa. It's only that in Namibia we don't have records. Maybe we are not interested. Mm-hmm. But it's happening in South Africa.
Yeah.
It's the reason Zuma and the family, they are not talking. It's the reason Dudu Zire was chased out of parliament, recruiting people for, to go to fight in the side of Russia.
Is it this guy?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
that is exactly what he said. He stated. Then you also look at intelligence report from Kenya. They are indicating that thousands of them, they are going there. But you're asking yourself to say, what?
So people are literally coming from countries that are politically stable to walk into an active war zone
Just to be paid.
Just to be paid.
And the Russians give you a lot of money.
This keeps don't make it worse, Dwight.
No, it's a lot of money they give you, bruh.
Look, the thing is, if someone is willing to to walk into a war zone, to get paid. Again, the question keeps coming.
You're coming from where?
As a leader.
Yeah.
If I was the president and I had stories of my, of my people finding themselves in war zones all across the world, fighting for opportunities, the question I would ask myself is, how can I make this stop? Because first of all, that's not a very good diplomatic picture.
No, it's not a very good diplomatic picture. And the other thing is also that people, they also take advantage of you. Your people. You want to tell me that the Russians, they do not know that there are thousands of Africans that are fighting on their side. They know that even maybe 2 years ago or 3 years ago at the beginning of the war, but they know that the situation in Africa, somebody rather go and fight with drones and become a casualty of war.
And if you look at Russian presence in West Africa, then you can sort of like see how easy it is to find these soldiers fighting on the side of Russia and Ukraine.
And what is also interesting is that you can find any analyst, whichever side you are, the war between Russia and Ukraine is not an easy war. And Ukrainian, they've proven to be tested in the battleground. They are very good with, they have best drone technicians in the world. They can target you everywhere, wherever you are. They are now hitting inside Russia. We can debate to say who is right and who is wrong. But the casualty of war is, on many African young people, there is no records of those who came back. Maybe there are records of those who are paid.
Yeah.
But you only hear about somebody who got killed in the war zone. Mm-hmm. But what the question that we should continue to ask is that, what is that so difficult that we cannot solve here in Africa? One thing that, and I think there are some positions that we have a right to speak openly. And without, being fearing of your political position. Or maybe if you are a professional, like the Director General of CDC, when that doctor stood up and speak to some of the senior leaders in Africa, he said we need 1.4 to 1.5 billion to fight Ebola. But we are not saying we should go to outside the continent. Money, you have the money, just put your government in order. Because the records are saying the money that you are losing throughout corruption, illicit financial flow, the money that kept you at the, under surveillance of Financial Action Task Force, if you just put your governance in order, then we can get that money and we fight Ebola. It's not a matter of us to say we need to go and borrow. But, we are getting there, and very slowly. The optimistic part should not be absent.
Would save a lot of money if we stopped stealing. That's what that doctor was saying. He just decided to put it in a diplomatic way.
It's dimensions also, guys. Specifically, if we look at how good your life is, specifically in your country. The interview we obviously had with Ivor. Proves that Namibia seems to be an island away from the continent and its issues. You cited, for example, like what that Botswana head of intelligence said.
Yeah.
What is happening in Kenya.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know if there are Namibians that obviously. We know of the supposed rumors.
How would you know if you don't have data?
Exactly.
That is the thing. Exactly. Because if something is not,
if you can fly without a visa to Russia right now, how would you?
How would you know if you don't have data? If if it's not reported, it doesn't mean that it's not there. And you must not get it wrong. If it's not reported, it doesn't mean that it's not there.
Yeah.
We were speaking when we were reading report of, for example, Interpol report. All those years to say no, there is human trafficking in Angola, in Botswana, South Africa, and here and there. But we were shocked. Was it last year or this year?
Last year.
When our people were stuck in Myanmar,
This year? Yeah, it was this year.
Yeah. It does mean that if it's not reported, it does mean that it's not there.
It's not
there. Yeah, the same thing. That's why we're saying, we don't want those bad statistics. I also don't want it. But the fact is that what are you doing to prevent it? Because lack of evidence does not necessarily mean that you did not do it.
The thing is not happening.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that it's not happening. It's just a matter of looking at the issue. Yeah, but
I mean, one of the core things also that translates from this report is also a discussion of, you already mentioned it, like the core, dealing with core issues.
Yeah.
In our scenario in Namibia, the core issues have been it's actually a melting pot. It's actually one massive poiki of not so nice things. We have to know how to properly decentralize without causing destabilization to central government. Meaning that the regions actually perform on development tasks.
Yeah.
I mean, up and until when we had the conversation about Comas's State of the Region address, where we sat there thinking, but the governor is reporting on ministerial developments and City of Windhoek developments. What is the regional council's development?
No, it's a good analysis.
Because our communication looks like, because he's borrowing the strategies from known entities. So what is his entity? Well, what are their contributions?
So basically, this is a tradition we have adopted.
It's technically, okay, David's analysis earlier that day technically meant it's a tradition we imposed on ourselves. David, can you please?
Yeah.
Can you please make us aware of that thing you explained?
Like, you know what?
Yeah. No, not to touch on the duplication of duty, and also to explain, to say whose role, for example, is to develop commerce. When somebody say commerce has to develop, when you are looking at the context of regional politics, it's a governor. But the central, the seat of government is City of Windhoek, where you have the mayor and you have the CEO.
And you have its council.
And you have also its council.
Mm.
Then that can already tell you to say, not necessarily to say they should not exist, but are the roles well defined?
Yeah.
You know, there are some institutions that you attend. It's only that you will not mention it. There are some institutions that you attend. Né? Then the CEO give a presentation. The chairperson of the board give a presentation.
Mm.
If there is a clear distinction in terms of duty, you'll be able to understand. But if you see the outcome of that institution, the speech will tell you to say the speech that was supposed to be given by the CEO is coming again from there, or they are almost the same.
Yeah,
because there's no clear duplication of duties.
Or the CEO is the MC. CEO is the MC, the master of ceremonies, and the board chairperson is now like the what do they call that thing? Keynote address.
Yeah.
And you go like, the board chairperson?
Yeah. You know, it's quite tough out there. But to get things right, I realize that governance is quite a very difficult thing to put in place, especially governing with results.
Mm.
You know, there is a very interesting video by ENCA that, the premier of Gauteng, Panyazare Sufi, one of the charismatic guy who people think that he will be very competitive in the next Congress, just to put it out there. No, the video was when he was elected, or when ANC was elected, he called all the young people in Gauteng. Then he told them to say, put an ANC in power, it will be the end of unemployment, and he presented very good projects. Then they are young people. And in the same video, I think it's combined, before and after. They were dancing. It's young and it's charismatic and it's accommodative.
Yeah, he is,
and he knows how to work with people. Yeah. Right? Yeah. But they all are running to him. They want to carry him up. But there is the after, where they are saying, no. We just want to talk to Tate Panyazare Sufi directly, because things that he promised us, they are not here.
They came back.
Yeah,
now
but
they need an appointment.
Yeah, they need an appointment. But they were defending him to say, no, it's a very good premier, and he's somebody who is going to change our lives. The program is well, but you don't really know what happened to say. In Africa, why are we doing this?
And that's the disconnect. I mean, the disconnect has been, okay, Hamoud and I, we love dissecting history.
Mm.
But the history that we're sometimes exposed to is usually European-centric,
mm.
which shows that colonialism formed a part for adequate development to take place.
Mm.
Namibia does not have to colonize anything, just to put it out there, guys.
Mm.
However, the biggest issue we deal with is, like David said, how do we connect our dots? Now, it should have been a discussion of, let's say, I don't want towns looking the same for the past 50 years since the town was made a town in the 1950s, and the town still looks the same in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
That should be a motivation enough, guys, to tell anyone out there, guys, we need to change something.
Mm-hmm.
But before we continue, guys, we actually have to take a short ad break and then come back after that.
Yeah.
Davichi University for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse Midwife or Accoucheur Level 6, Certificate in Pharmacy Level 5, Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6, Bachelor of Social Work Honours, Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8, Master of Public Health, and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever.
The disconnect.
The disconnect, Helmut. Well, the disconnect also basically resonates from the report itself. Because you can see, like, that previous label, the what was that? It's the satisfaction indicator that you spoke of. Where's that page? Page 18, or was it page 16 you said?
Yeah.
No, not 16. There was another one, Helmut. The other one.
The
one that showed the...
That must be page 19.
19.
19.
That page 21, or page 19, sorry. That one...
Showing that economic inequality,
yeah,
the rising cost of living is the most painful.
Yeah, which also which resonates with much of the things that you and David have also cited. For example, why do we? Yes, you will have an educated, literate African, and suddenly the guy finds himself on the Ukraine-Russia front line.
Yeah,
in Luhansk and the Donetsk and the Donbas area. Why is he there fighting someone else's fight?
No, we should have seen this from, let me just say, a lot of people saw this.
Yeah.
I think it's safe to say a lot of people saw this. Look at it this way. You have academics.
Yeah.
You and I watch interviews a lot of African academics that are being asked to comment, to give their expert opinion on either political, economic, or social discussions that are taking place on the African continent.
Yeah.
And most of these guys are being interviewed out of Europe.
Yeah.
They're academics, they're Africans, they're being interviewed out of Europe.
They are in Europe.
On this topic, to give us more expert insights on this topic, we have Mr. Sososo in line, joined, you know, who is an expert at this African history, this African financing. He is originally from Nigeria or from Namibia, but he's talking to us from London.
Here's what you and David were citing. Lack of opportunities.
He's talking to us from, man, South Africa is worse. He's talking to us from Berlin.
Yeah.
He's talking to us from
Mozambique. Yeah.
You know, from Switzerland.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Now, if you have academics that have all kinds of educational qualifications, they are basically at the top of their career in terms of, in terms of education qualifications. And they are leaving the continent.
Mm.
It really shouldn't be shocking to see that you have the large number of youth that are literally willing to drown in the Red and Mediterranean Sea in search of opportunities. Again, the question for me would be, it should be a priority for the African Union. they should be asking the questions of, we have, yes, we have a large youthful population, which speaks to a very strong workforce. That means industrialization, the human resources in terms of workforce is, now that part is sorted out.
Yeah.
So we don't have to deal with the, you know, with the problems that you see the, you know, the Singaporeans, the Korean, the Japanese have to deal with, because in terms of their, you know, their struggling population in terms of replacement. So, because in a long run, that, you know, that feeds into your, it starts impacting your workforce. If your workforce is reduced, so are your taxes. And now you have a very small population of people that are left to cater for a very large number of retired population,
yeah,
which is just, you know, it becomes a burden for your work, you know, for your workforce. Now, we don't have that problem.
Mm.
We don't have that problem. Because we have a large youthful population. But the thing is, as much as we like to boast around having a large youthful population, we don't know how to cater for this population. And now this population, the youthful population, full of energy, is you know, is facing economic economic problems that are so bad, they are either, you know, they are choosing drowning and a war zone over those negative economic activities.
It's not just the war zone that they're selecting; it's also the very dangerous journey they sometimes make. For example, the first examples that you and David cited.
Yeah.
For example, just what happened just yesterday between Spain and Morocco.
Morocco, yeah.
Apparently 49,000 people. The last time I checked this morning, between yesterday and today, 49,000 people.
Crossed.
Had crossed. It's a lot of people. It's a lot of people. And I remember back in COVID, the videos that sprang up about youth, young Moroccans,
mm-hmm,
who decided to swim across the strait. There's a part of Morocco that you don't need to go to the enclave, mm-hmm, where yesterday's crossing happened. You can swim literally. It's known as the closest part between Spain and Morocco, between Europe and Morocco.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a 10, 15 kilometer distance.
I can barely run that distance.
And the guy, and some of the kids, some of the young guys, some of the guys, they swam that distance. And at that stage in 2020, 2021, that was when Europe was doing the, they were using their navies basically to patrol the Mediterranean, mm-hmm, for, you know, that illegal trafficking.
I mean, there was a time when they were paying Gaddafi
to keep the people there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that picture was now one that was happening since 2020 into this direction. It would have been interesting to know what was the major driver for that Quetta or Kiet Sweta or whatever that thing's name is, that 49,000 storm that happened yesterday.
Yeah, it would be very interesting to know.
To know why were those people there? Is it that they are there every day to try and climb the fence, that ugly high fence? Or was this just the unfortunate day when that fence unfortunately buckled? That's the only thing I would like to know. Because,
In 2022.
Yeah.
In 2022, according to the, United Nations Office of Special Advisor on Africa, OSA, in 2022, they wrote that over the last decade, a remittance flow to Africa doubled, reaching 100 billion in 2022, I calculated to be about 1.7 trillion Namibian dollars, surpassing the funds received through official development assistance and foreign direct investment combined.
Yeah.
So remittances are a good thing for African economy, but how the people that are sending this money home are getting to these opportunities, they are risking everything.
Yeah.
And for the most part, the reason why they are risking everything to go, to go in search of these opportunities, they are obviously, now, if you look at the amount of money in remittance in 2022, being very higher than foreign direct investment, what's this showing is people want to take care of their loved ones. Otherwise, they wouldn't be sending all that amount of money back. People just want to take care of their loved ones, but they can't.
Or the only way for them to do that is either join a war, like with the Russia-Ukraine conflict, yeah, or basically make that dangerous journey to Europe
now
through the Sahara Desert and then with traffickers.
Here's one scary thing. Now, yeah, if you have someone that's joining a foreign, joining the army to go and fight, in a foreign war, what do you think? You know, what do you think the market is in terms of recruitment for rebels?
Yeah,
is because that feeds, someone hops, you know, someone swims across a literal sea to go and fight in a foreign war. That is being fed by economic desperation. Mm. That economic desperation means human traffickers, drug traffickers, arms traffickers, rebels, all this. They are, you know, they are feeding on that desperation. So that, you know, that feeds into your, silencing of the guns by 2021, which I believe has now been pushed to 2030.
I think we should just ignore that.
Now, here's the thing.
The thing is not gonna, that guns won't end.
It won't end because we are not solving the root cause, which is the economic desperation, which is forcing people to join world questionable organizations like your M23, for example.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that they are being backed up by a bunch of legitimate leaders, that's another problem. Now, you are an African leader and you hop on a plane and you visit the countries where your people are literally, you know, risked everything and some of them died trying to get to. And you have a convoy and you have all this. And what's more embarrassing than that?
Mm.
Okay. And by the way, we fought for this country. It's not enough. Thank you very much.
I was born for this country. Don't worry. That's all you need, Hamad.
Like, look, it's a very good conversation to have.
The fighting?
It's a very good conversation to have.
You could have survived your own street in your community.
Yeah, historical wise, it's a very good conversation to have. But yes, we have heroes and heroines. Excellent idea. Because one of the thing I like about that is we get to have the political stability that we have to have open discussions like this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know, if you find yourself in place like Sudan, for example, or Libya, it's kind of difficult to sit in a studio like we are and have all these kinds of discussions without having to worry about, you know, bombs exploding left, right, and center. Having, you know, stop mid-podcast to run with your mobile
podcast?
Equipment.
Podcast? Do you think there's internet now?
Yeah, I'm assuming.
In Sudan?
Yeah.
Okay, somebody would have confiscated the internet by now in Sudan. One of the two guys. Somehow they are communicating with each other. I mean, that is just a bad scenario, that particular thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so...
And the best case scenario is, they just confiscate the equipment. That's the best case scenario.
And they make you pay. They make you work without pay.
Yeah.
That's the worst case. But yeah.
The worst case is they kill you.
True. And they still take the stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as we obviously sit here, dear listeners, looking at some of the particular talking points that we've cited from the Africa Youth Survey.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good thing that reports and literature like the Africa Youth Survey and even the other ones that Helmut and I love tapping into, like Afrobarometer as well, which is also a continent-wide initiative. It puts a good... It shines a good light specifically on finding out perspectives from the continent.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kilograms of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You Save. Where else?
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and
Welcome back. 15 minutes left to the hour of 7. You are listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. So now, the challenge, according to the African Development Bank,
yeah,
the challenge is not simply a shortage of money. It is mobilizing, intermediating, and deploying the capital that already exists effectively and at scale. That's Africa's problem. At least this report was compiled specifically for Southern Africa.
Yeah.
And in an increasingly fragmented economy, that's the thing. We are looking at a lot of, we have to do this in a fragmenting economy because you have tariffs and the armed conflicts, going rampant.
Yeah.
Now, the challenge is not simply a shortage of money. But it is a matter of mobilizing, intermediating, and deploying the capital that already exists effectively and at scale. That was, Kennedy Mbekiani said of African Development Bank Director General said on the Economic Outlook report on 2026 Economic Outlook on Southern Africa.
Mm.
So. Every time that we talk about development, we more often talk about, oh, no, we don't have the resources, we don't have the resources. No. Maybe we don't have the resources to go around, but what the African Development Bank is looking at here, and this is the same thing that the ECA is also the point that the ECA is making, is the resources that we have, the few resources that we have, are we deploying them effectively?
Yeah.
And the short answer is we are not, because there's a lot of these resources that's leaving the continent. And I know that, when you say that, it's very easy to think of it in terms of the extractive industry where you have the natural resources living in raw form. But that, yes, that is true. It's one of those resources that we have in scarcity that we are allowing to go unprocessed. But this resources that is not exploited in terms of its full advantage is in reference to illicit financing. A lot of money is illegally leaving the continent. Much of it, the suspicion coming out of SADC, is it's coming out of the public procurement space. Translation, it's being stolen by the people that are supposed to be protecting it. And then, we just stash it in some offshore bank accounts somewhere in the West, and then we go to the very same financial institutions to borrow money for quote-unquote development.
Mm.
And when this money arrives, we steal it again and then take it. Then we go and borrow the same money we stole and then bring it here. We're caught in a loop here.
Oh, we do love.
Go and borrow money and then, for quote-unquote development, steal it, take it to that bank.
Sticky fingers to it.
Yeah. And then go and borrow the same money and...
First, explain like guilty school kids in front of a principal's commission.
Yeah.
Why did you steal the money? I mean, that's still the most embarrassing thing.
And then, we use some of that money to buy all types of properties in those countries, which we pay all
which
kinds
they
of.
They anyway see the money coming back to them like this.
Yeah.
My goodness. But yeah, we are there. We are there.
It's stealing or development?
Both. We are there. I'm just saying we are there, Hamoud. That's why I said both, because both happen at the same time. Our biggest concern obviously has to be also primarily, just in this last 10 minutes, I have a big concern as well, Hamoud, because there's a whole bunch of youth that grew up with those same particular officials who were... gallivanting on money that was meant for development.
Yeah.
And they now see that kind of body language, attitude, behavior that is being promoted, that is being advertised in terms of activities and the likes.
Yeah.
Some of our kids probably will be going to school with them. Okay, I don't have kids. I can't say our. Some of your kids will be going to school with such people, just so that you guys know. Which also then asks the question of the fabric or the fiber of your community, of the national community.
Is it something we harbor since a household level, the ability to just extract for me? I don't care by what means I'm going to extract.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to extract for me and just for myself. Me. For myself. Because obviously you would have your immediate family, right? Benefiting. Like, for example, husband, wife, kids, definitely. Mom and dad, definitely.
Definitely, Kamporoto.
Yeah, definitely. Would it be, is it a scenario like that, that your life is just too pressurizing? I'm asking this question now because there's a reason why I started from a youth that is exposed to people like that in for example, in the Namibian economy. Namibia is pretty small, so they know each other. Because part of this report also tries to understand from a broad spectrum, whether you come from a very privileged background or an underprivileged background, doesn't matter which one. If you are participating in such a particular perspective, because it gives obviously a holistic view of that, the pains, like the cost of living, and then the third, second one, and then the second point, that particular page. When you measure up that page specifically, for example, with understanding that potentially there might be young people who are very well off, whose parents probably, they don't know how their parents got that money or that particular wealth or accumulated that particular wealth. By hook or by crook, we don't know. And I'm asking this primarily on a subject matter that is not measured in this report. I'm asking this for us to understand. Do we understand specifically what morals are and specifically what good governance looks like? I know Ivor indicated good governance is some of the major particular things as well, but usually how you identify lack of governance is you see corruption.
Yeah.
Back in last year when the NAMCOR arrests took place, start of June or start of July, I interviewed the public administration or the lecturer, the professor at NUST, what was his name? Johan Kutsia, Professor Kutsia. I asked him a fundamental question. Our interview was just from that first question.
Yeah.
Does Namibia have a governance issue, Helmut? And he said yes.
Yeah.
Because we can't have such high profile events manifesting or coming out in the last 10, 15 years specifically.
Yeah.
And then also the Auditor General's reports. And then you see the standing committees from the National Assembly and Council, which all speak towards either lack of governance or not adequate enough levels of governance and supervision and monitoring and evaluation aspects. And everything just continuously speaks to not being there to administer, not being there, not being present to supervise and monitor and exercise, stuff like that. And all of it translates into governance.
Definitely.
So Namibia, on our side, we know we've got a major governance issue.
Look, this economic inequality did not pop out of the blue.
No, it just didn't. It just happened there on the ground.
I know, it didn't.
Yeah. Someone decided not to deliver a service. Someone decided not to drive the trash removal or the refuse removal truck that day. And now people's refuse is building up in their yards.
I mean, I will keep going back to the Natural Resources Standing Committee, Parliamentary Standing Committee on the quote-unquote, illegal lithium mining. Look, the
so-called
illegal. The fact that we had to have that conversation speaks to a governance issue on the side, at least on that particular case, on the side of the traditional authorities, on the side of the Ministry of Environment, on the side of the Ministry of Mines.
Yeah.
Because the two companies that went and found unrehabilitated pits, that speaks to the fact that someone who was supposed to make sure that the previous company rehabilitated the pits before leaving didn't do their job.
Yeah.
That's very simple.
Yeah.
They didn't do their job. So, and we ended up with allegations of illegal lithium mining. And then to the point where a standing committee had to go and basically, settle the storm that was brewing.
Yeah.
And they investigated and compiled a report. And at the center of it are two things. Miscommunication that was so bad starts from the traditional authority all the way to ministries. That was so bad to the point where it all adds up to a governance issue.
Mm. No, it does. And sometimes governance is strengthened by proper communication, because what we saw with the UI scenario, which is the one case, we also saw, for example, with like the Directorate of Mining with the gold mines, mm-hmm. about just confirming data, just confirming, verifying data. They didn't have to collect the data. They just had to receive the data.
Yeah.
But they have to confirm and verify the data. And they didn't do this.
No, my favorite in that regard is the Fisheries Observer Fund report from the Office of the Auditor General.
Who didn't even report anything for 10 years.
Not just that.
Or are you still looking at the financial...
First of all...
Moving numbers.
Look, man, if you are going to lie, at least make it believable.
But they could. But how much you know?
That's like me coming out of my mom's house as a kid with with Cremora all over my face, and my mom is like, "Did you steal the Cremora?" "No, mom, I did not even see the Cremora." Dude, you are covered in it. And
I don't know who eats Cremora.
Boy, I was beaten a lot for that.
You know, we did love the Ultramel. You know, the custard that you buy. That thing is delicious, yo.
Yeah, no idea.
I concur with what's his name? Trevor Noah on the Ultramel. You know, you can catch me redder than any time.
Yeah.
When it comes to Ultramel, I'll eat it. So still today, you know. We just can't let it go.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Now, at least we can agree that when you look at much of the problem, especially, and you don't have to speculate. Mm. Just get the information that's public. And this is information that's been put together already. And this is the information it doesn't have to come out of the private sector.
Yeah.
Take, for example, the Natural Resources Standing Committee on the UIC lithium mining dispute.
Mm.
That's coming out of the National Assembly analysis,
mm.
which is an excellent source for me
mm.
because it shows they have got to pull their socks up.
Mm.
And I think that speaks to, that also speaks to this whole working in silos discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whose job is it to make sure that rehabilitation takes place? And I think that's the question that the Natural Resources Standing Committee should have asked. Whose job was it to make sure that rehabilitation takes place here? And why didn't they do their job?
But you know also, Helmut, sometimes how some of these problems are reported to the National Assembly.
Yeah.
I remember who submitted that motion.
Yeah.
It was an MP from LPM, no longer there. But it was his motion. If you read that motion document,
yeah.
The thing is confusing. Let me just say that. It was confusing. Because the document should have said, these are the concerns of this community.
Yeah.
These are the latest developments of this that's happening in the community's immediate surrounding area. And this is what we need to try and understand. Somehow from that motion, we went to claiming that the lithium mining is illegal and before we end off. And then we jumped and then we realized there were unrehabilitated zones there.
So we're just discovering things we should have known.
That standing committee was just stumbling through everything and we know it. But yeah.
All right, so until tomorrow?
Tomorrow?
Saturday. It's Friday. Yeah, tomorrow.
You are till Sunday.
Tomorrow I'm sleeping and gaming.
Yeah, same for me. I'm till Sunday, early morning session, as we always do here on my Sunday morning take, guys. Let's see each other again. Otherwise, catch us again on Monday.
Definitely. Monday it is.